Eternity's Echo, JFK's Last Stand, Chapter 10, Into the Rift, A Hero's Final Stand. Dr. Hugh Everett is able to deploy the containment device designed to stop the spread of the rift. The commandos' relentless assault with their antimatter throwers and the quick-witted heroics of Jack and Bobby Kennedy have enabled this development. But as the device detonates, it fights in vain against the darkness. The rift has grown too strong. It threatens not only the lab or the world of 2018, but every reality across all of the many worlds. In fact, the rift seems to feed off the containment energy. Its new efforts tearing at the very fabric of reality. The world around it begins to fray, time and space bending under the strain. Dr. Everett, shouting over the noise, says, "The containment field is weakening. If we don't stabilize it now, it'll tear everything apart." And JFK says urgently, "We're not giving up. There has to be a way to strengthen the field." There is the sound of machinery groaning under the strain, metal creaking under the pressure. A military officer rushes up to the president. "Sir, the rift's expansion is faster and faster. It's starting to pull everything in." And JFK, determined, turns to his scientist. "Everett, we need more power. Boost the containment field, whatever it takes." And Everett, focused, quickly adjusting the controls, says, "I'm rerouting the auxiliary power. This is all or nothing." The whine of the containment device intensifies, a deep hum that fills the air, the rift's roar growing louder. The world teeters on the edge of destruction as the rift continues to expand. The last push to stabilize it is underway, but time is running out. Everett turns to the commander-in-chief. "This simply is not enough. The containment is failing. It's slipping out of our grasp. We're losing this one, Mr. President." And JFK, assessing the chaos, his voice steady, says, "Then we don't have any choice. We're going to have to go right to the heart of it with this containment device. Would that work, Dr. Everett?" And Everett says, "I thought it would be enough to detonate it very close to the vortex, the center. But obviously I was wrong." Kennedy presses him. "I said, would it work to go to the heart, the very center of this rift?" And a military officer, alarmed, says, "Into the rift itself, sir? That's madness. You would never make it out alive." JFK, resolute, his eyes on the device and then on the swirling vortex, says, "This is not about making it out. It's about making sure that the world does. We have to hit it where it's weakest, right at its core." And Everett, his voice shaking, says, "Mr. President, you can't. That's a death sentence. Let me take the device. I can..." And JFK cuts him off. "No, Hugh, this is on me. I'm the commander-in-chief, and this is my call." The president then forcefully grabs the containment device from Dr. Everett, his face set with determination. "I'm taking this football in for the touchdown, Hugh. This isn't a job for a scientist. This is a job for a leader." Bobby, witnessing what's going on, rushes forward. "Then I'm coming with you, Jack. I've got your back." And JFK turns to his brother, his voice softer but firm. "No, Bobby, this is where you stay. If something goes wrong and I don't return, someone has to be left behind to pick up the pieces. This country, this world, it needs you to be there if I'm not." Bobby, usually contained, begins to tear up, his resolve faltering. "Jack, you don't have to do this. You're my brother." And Jack says, smiling sadly, "Maybe this is what I was meant for all along, Bobby. You keep everyone safe if I don't come back. You will lead." JFK takes a deep breath, holding the containment device close as he heads toward the rift, the chaotic energy swirling violently around him. With the weight of countless worlds on his shoulders, the president steps forward, ready to face the impossible. His courage, his sacrifice, and unwavering resolve are the last lines of defense in the fight to save everything. Cradling the containment device, the roaring of the rift growing louder, a deafening symphony of chaos, JFK steps forward, his face illuminated by the blinding light of the anomaly. The rift churns violently, a monstrous force threatening to tear reality apart. As JFK approaches, the weight of the moment presses down on him. The failsafe device in his hands hums with a foreboding energy, its power the last hope for sealing this cosmic tear. JFK whispers to himself, a mix of fear and resolve, "Not my way, Lord, but your way. Give me strength, for this is for all of us, for every world, for every future." Everett screams over the commotion, his voice filled with anguish. "Mr. President, please, you don't have to do this. There has to be another way." And Jack, his voice calm but determined, as if speaking to a friend, says, "Hugh, this is the only way. We talked about the ripple effect, how it can change everything. I'm choosing this. This is my reality, and I'll do what it takes to save it and every other one." The rift begins to distort, sensing the threat. Its form shifts, and it suddenly takes on a new shape, a dark, shadowy reflection of JFK himself. It's a twisted mirror image, embodying all of the man's fears, doubts, and the countless failures that haunt him across realities. "Just look at you, you small, weak entity. You think you can stop me? I am the void, the darkness that consumes all. You will fail, just as you have in so many other worlds. So why fight when you cannot win?" And JFK, gritting his teeth defiant, says, "Because fighting is what makes us human. We push on, even when odds are impossible. We don't give up because it's hard. We do what is right. We do what is right because it is the thing to do. We do what is right because we are guided by divine guidance. We do what is right even if it costs us everything." The rift looms before him, a tear in the fabric of reality, a place where time and space lose all meaning. Here in this moment, John F. Kennedy feels the weight of his life, his choices, and the path that has led him to this point. He thinks of his family, his children, his beloved Jacqueline, and all that he has fought for. He says softly, almost to himself, "So much to live for. And yet there comes a time when we all must answer the call of something greater. My life has been one of service and sacrifice, and now I must make the ultimate one. Like my Savior before me, I ask the Almighty to take this burden from me, but I know that it is mine to bear." Bobby is horrified.
"My God, Jack, you gotta stop. Hugh, he's stepping into the void. And there's not a damn thing that either of us can do to stop him."
But the swirling, roaring sound of the vortex seems to merge subtly with the distant sounds of a Dallas motorcade in 1963. "Join you now from Dallas, Texas, where President John F. Kennedy is en route to the trademark to deliver a key address. The President and First Lady, along with Texas Governor John Connally, are making their way through the city's enthusiastic crowds." In this place, beyond time, as the void consumes him, Jack Kennedy's life echoes across realities. The sacrifice is made, the fate sealed. But in every world, every version of history, his courage stands as a testament to who he was. "We have just received word. There has been a shooting. I repeat, there has been a shooting in the motorcade. The president in Dallas, Texas, the president has been shot." JFK, echoing in the void, says,
"It is done. I have kept my pledge. Whatever my creator and destiny have set me out for, it is done."
"President John F. Kennedy has been assassinated. The president of the United States has passed." The void has reached its peak, a powerful crescendo, and then silence, a reflective personal quiet, as the scene ends.